so good to see you.
So it is a delight to see your face too. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks so much for agreeing to be here. You are honestly like a real estate queen times 100. You help people.
That's high praise.
Welcome to the Real Estate Queens podcast, ladies. I'm Marina Schifferman, your real estate fairy godmother. And in these episodes, we are going to talk everything buying and owning real estate, confidence, money, so many juicy topics, and all the female empowerment vibes. Let's do it.
Well, you are. That's amazing. I, first of all, want you to introduce yourself and tell everybody how amazing you are.
Well, I am Emily Cox. I am one half of a dynamic design duo called Onyx Design Collaborative, along with my brilliant, beautiful work wife and business partner, Michelle. And 4 years ago now, I realized that through my work as an interiors architect and an interior designer, that the women in our industry just really didn't have enough support to feel confident in excelling in the building industry. So I launched a support circle for women who work in the building industry called Building Badasses. And over the years, that's grown to include a lot of education and empowerment for female homeowners also.
That's amazing. So Thanks. You are an interior designer architect. What do people hire you for?
So they hire Onyx Design Collaborative for high-end residential projects, focusing on the detailing and selections of the hard finishes that dress the interior of the home, what I refer to as interior architecture, and full service procurement, fabric, furnishings, soft goods, which is what my business partner, Michelle, is an expert in. And I have Michelle and I both have educational backgrounds in architecture. I have an undergrad and a master's degree from Clemson University in architecture. And so just realized through my work experience that I was a very mediocre project architect, but an exceptional interiors focused client relationship developer. So I niched my way down into my current level of expertise.
That's amazing. A lot of people listening to this podcast have not even done a remodel before, have no idea what the terms are. I've never bought a home before.
Right.
So break that down a little bit. Like, there's a lot of material. There's a lot of finishes. There's rough, there's finished, like everything.
Sure. Well, first of all, I would say for those of you listening who are interested in learning more about all aspects of residential property ownership and maintenance and the planning and execution of a residential design or remodel project, we've got a lot of educational materials through Building Badasses, including our own podcast that we'd love to share with you. But when you tackle any type of residential construction project, there are roughly 10 times more decisions to be made about all the materials, processes, and components that go into the actual construction of that project than anyone might suspect. Totally. And so, you know,
and you don't know until you get into it. It's not just like, oh, I like this countertop. It is so much more than that.
It's true. And, you know, everyone has purchased a sofa before, or most people have purchased a sofa before. So you think, hey, I got this.
Yeah.
No worries. I'm prepared. I can totally do this myself. And many people can. But there's no shame in realizing once you've started that maybe perhaps you can't, because that's the reason that there's a whole rich industry of professionals such as ourselves that are here to help make that process more manageable for you.
Totally. Oh my gosh. I respect your profession so much.
Oh, thanks.
The first time I did a huge remodel, I bought my home, like when I was 27, my first home, and I did a huge remodel. First thing I knew, I don't know how to make this home beautiful at all. Designer. For sure. Woman designer for sure.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people think they can do it themselves because they want to save time or money, but it's actually the opposite. They're going to waste so much time and so much money.
And, you know, yes, we as a profession focus on making your surroundings beautiful, beautiful to you. I should specify that, because the mark of a really great designer is not that she or he have a specific aesthetic that they execute for you, but rather that they are incredible listeners with lots of tools at their disposal to bring your vision to life. But furthermore, it's only probably, I'm going to guesstimate, maybe 20% of what we do has to do exclusively with the aesthetic or the way that the project looks. So the beauty of the project is, of course, in the eye of the beholder, but probably only 20 or 25% of what we do in a day's work is really about making something beautiful. So much of what we do is about making sure that your processes run smoothly, that information is conveyed correctly, and that the various aspects of your project are going to function well for you and perform well for you over time. And I think that that's very difficult. Those aspects are very difficult for a layperson to assess. Budget management is challenging. And understanding who's supposed to provide what is very, very complex. I say that it's not rocket science, but you know, there's a lot of smoke and mirrors around this whole industry. So it's easy to become very overwhelmed because there is no true, clear, laid out path for you. And so as a non-industry person, when you tackle your own renovation, it can be a lot to manage. And let me tell you right now, Pinterest is not your friend.
Get into that. Oh, okay. Anyway, let's talk about the process of remodeling.
Like, sure.
What's the process? And then when someone comes to you, where do you come in the process? Let's go from A to Z.
Well, ideally, you're going to start at A. So
who's A?
I will tell you that fully 80% of remodel clients hire professionals too late. They would have been better served to hire the professional on day one. Because not only can we help structure the process, make it very much more linear and straightforward for you and prepare you for what's to come, we can help you steer yourself around some potential potholes and obstacles that you're going to unfortunately spend a lot of time, energy, money, and unnecessary stress trying to avoid on your own.
Mm-hmm. So who's all involved? Who do they hire?
So when you're hiring an interior designer, you may well hire, you could hire, it depends based on your state as to what the licensure requirements are. But I think a lot of people are shocked to discover that in many states, in fact, most states in the U.S., you're not required to have any licensure whatsoever in order to call yourself an interior designer, meaning that you don't have to have been educated. You don't have to have been, you don't have to sit for any type of licensure exam. All you really need is a business license. And so I think that that is surprising to many people. And so you may end up hiring someone who is more of a decorator than an educated designer. There's nothing wrong with that. And that might be the right fit for your job. Typically, when you're looking for a team of professionals to help you with a renovation, you're going to be dealing with an interior designer, a licensed architect, if you need to move structural walls and plumbing, if you need to navigate some type of Board of Architectural Review process, often you will be required to submit what's called a stamped set to your municipality, your town, your homeowners association, and a stamped set requires a licensed architect. So a licensed architect will have been through an undergrad program and or a master's program in architecture to get a professional degree, and has then had a minimum of 3 years of very targeted specific work experience. and then has sat for a licensing exam that often takes up to a year with 7 different sections to pass. So those are the requirements professionally for a licensed architect. You're going to be dealing with either running your own subcontractors or hiring a general contractor. We want to be sure all those are licensed and bonded also. And then depending on the scope of your renovation, you may be well served to work with a kitchen and bath designer, which is a type of accreditation that you can receive through various licensure agencies in order to become a specialist, to have more sort of specific experience in laying out and designing cabinetry conditions.
That's a lot of information. I have so many questions. First of all, when you buy a house, the process of who you hire is not everybody all at once. You know, it's like the first person. Who is that first person? Is it generally an architect so he can draw the plan?
I'm thinking through. Part of it depends on how much project scope you're tackling. So a project scope means if you were to give me an elevator pitch of what you want to do to your house, that kind of explains the project scope to me to say, hey, I'm going to put all new cabinets in my kitchen. That would likely not require a licensed architect. So surface aesthetic improvements likely don't require a licensed architect. Moving structural walls, rerouting some or relocating some major plumbing, anything that's going to change the envelope or the footprint of your house, if you're adding on walls, exterior walls and roofing, that's likely going to require at a minimum what's called a residential designer, which is a professional who is not a licensed architect, but works in that type of design. But you may well need a licensed architect. And if you do, that would be what I would recommend hiring first. Otherwise, I would likely hire your interior designer before you hire your contractor, because whether you need a licensed architect or you can work exclusively with a kitchen and bath or interior designer, it's very valuable to get some documentation in advance that is professionally packaged and uses professional terminology in order to present that to a contractor that you want to interview. And, you know, that way you're not getting kind of run around by the contractor. You're also not at the mercy of the contractor's great ideas, which may not be, in fact, great ideas.
I cannot.
You're hiring someone to have great ideas, not just someone to build something.
That's amazing. I can't stress that enough. People hire get bids from a contractor first. He doesn't know how to bid you. You're just like, yeah, I want to do this. He doesn't know. You don't know if he can read the plans. You don't know if he knows what's up. Hiring designer architect first is amazing.
It is. And the other dangerous thing is, you know, if you hire a contractor first, you haven't given him the proper information to put the correct pricing and timeline together. Also, how do you know that one contractor was the right contractor for you? It's a much better plan to put together a professional package of directions, which is what we, you know, really ultimately what architectural drawings and specifications boil down to. They're just a package of information that gives a contractor directions. You really should put that packet together, and then you want to hand it around to a couple of different contractors and let those very smart, talented ladies tell you how much it's going to take for them to build your project. In other words, it doesn't always serve you best to do a bid process, but if you decide that that's the route you want to take, you absolutely want your design documents in hand before you approach contractors.
That was gold. Replay that right now. That was gold. Okay, and my other question was, like, how do you choose the designer and architect that's right for you?
Ooh, excellent question. First of all, you should choose on personality. because you should like this person that you're going to tell your innermost design secrets and your most heartfelt wishes to. I think that you should choose someone who is experienced in your location. A lot of construction codes and design aspects are critical to your region. So if you were to hire me, obviously you can tell that I am not from the West Coast. I'm from the Bible Belt in beautiful Charleston, South Carolina. I'm excellent at keeping hot, humid weather out of your house, but I'm terrible at knowing how, you know, whatever the ins and outs of California weather would impact material selection. So while I'd love to do your project, I may well not be your best bet. So my recommendation would be first match based on, you know, region. Make sure that your design professional has experience in the type of scope that you're doing, has some references from past clients who successfully completed a project similar to yours in terms of price point and complexity, and that you like that person as a person, because you're going to spend a lot of time together. So I think all those are great ways to sort of narrow down the field. And then you want to be sure that whomever you're dealing with is a very clear communicator, and that they have a level of transparency in their pricing and billing and project projection capability that you feel comfortable with.
Perfect. I think, yeah, personality is also very important in that too, mm-hmm. because like when I told my designer, I want 4 shower heads, you know, she got it. It would be awkward to tell a man that.
Exactly. And you know, our job isn't to talk you out of what you want. It's just to say, yes, and of course we can make that happen. It's a matter of,
what else do you need?
Right. Exactly. Here are the other things you might enjoy. Have you thought about these items? We can add them.
Perfect. Okay. What kind of home buyers do you usually work with? What kind of people do you usually work with? Who are your clients?
Our clients are typically building a second home, and often they do not live in the region as their primary residence. So we have a lot of remote clients who enjoy vacationing in the area. And most of our clients have had successful careers and are interested in building homes that they will ultimately retire to. So,
have you worked with any first timers?
We have worked with some first timers. And, you know, it's an interesting comparison, because first time home buyers or first time home builders tend to be focused on very different things than people who have had a more established track record in real estate. And we find that it is more of an educational process, but it's also a little bit more exciting, because typically the first timer has a lot of energy and enthusiasm and a lot of investment in the process.
Cool.
Yeah.
What are some tips or things to watch out for, or mistakes that you see a lot of first timers do?
I see a lot of mistakes in not paying sufficient attention to your electrical plan. So a lot of people underestimate the importance of determining exactly where you would appreciate an electrical receptacle, meaning where you're going to plug things in. They're also not very knowledgeable about all the options of sort of upgrades to your typical electrical receptacles or your light switches. So by giving just a little more thought to what you might want to plug in where over time and how you might want to control your lighting, it's actually at the beginning of the process very easy and inexpensive to trick out your project to be elevated without investing a lot more money. So for instance, where are you going to plug in your Christmas tree or your, you know, menorah? And how, if you're investing in a stunning large slab for your kitchen backsplash, is it going to have a white plastic covered receptacle right in the middle of it? No, thanks. We're going to spend $400 on a Primo specialty electrical receptacle that will disappear. And if we know that going in, that's not a big deal in managing the budget.
That's so important. Yeah, that design. It's something a lot of people didn't think about. Also, heat. What kind of heating do you guys have in Charleston?
So in Charleston, we are much more concerned about cooling our properties because it's so hot down here. But we depend on central heat and air. So that's typically run on, you know, your electrical system. And the focus is generally about keeping hot, humid air out of your home. Historically, homes in Charleston were built to be thrown open to the elements so that heat would rise through and create circulation and breezes that you would enjoy all through the hot summer months. But, you know, now that we have such an influx of people from New England, from Ohio, we are seeing more interest in radiant heat tile and other types of climate control approaches that are less typical to our market.
How do you keep the humid air out?
Well, we do a lot of encapsulation. So we do double paned impact resistant windows. So serious insulation on windows. We also air on the side of frequent small windows rather than one really large expanse of plate glass windows, because they're easier to dress with window with kind of residential scaled window treatments, and it ultimately ends up being a little there's a little less heat gain. So we do some of that. We do a lot of spray foam insulation in the attics and underneath the crawl spaces of homes. Although it's so damp that we don't truly tend to encapsulate our crawl spaces. And here we aren't built over basements typically because there's just too much seawater flooding.
Wow, that is so specific.
Yeah. So those are some of the reasons that I think it is really important not to fall in love with someone's work on Instagram and be like, oh, hey, a fabulous designer from Boston, come and do my historic, you know, townhouse in San Francisco. I mean, you may well have a beautiful interior room, but that's, you might not think your power bill's so beautiful.
Totally. Tell me about, didn't you start a workshop or a coaching program for women?
Yeah.
Tell me about that.
So we call it 60 Days to Construction Confidence. And we actually have doors opening in August. And yeah, it's really amazing. It's an opportunity for women to have a crash course in the terminology, organization, and communication necessary in managing their construction project. So basically, our intent is to give you enough information to be very dangerous to your contractor. So we want to prepare you for this particular course doesn't focus on the design decisions you're going to make about your project. It focuses on how you ensure that you are an educated client of your contractor. So we have a separate course called Dream Design that helps you make all the important decisions about the fixtures and finishes you're going to use, that helps you design your own project. Construction Confidence is really about implementing your project. How do you interview a contractor? How do you ensure that the contract structure protects you? How do you look for problems on your job site? How do you evaluate the work that's been done? How do you contest a pay draw? All those types of things are covered in this course. And an ongoing support from the membership of our online Building Badasses circle. So it's like there are probably 650 women who work in the building industry who are there to help you, you know, weigh in and answer your all your questions as you go through your process.
And this is for women all over the United States?
It is. You know, because we started out in Charleston, we're Charleston heavy or South Carolina heavy in terms of our membership. But we're nationwide now, so we may not have members in every state, but we have members in every region who can weigh in and help.
So what's the mission? To make more women badasses?
Absolutely. The mission is to empower women to be educated consumers of the building industry from a female homeownership standpoint. And then ultimately, the goal is to solve the labor shortage in the construction industry from the viewpoint of women working in the building industry.
Yes. So try to hire women contractors, women laborers, women trades, yeah. Everything.
Yeah, there's a real need. We're excellent at what we do in all aspects of the building industry. And it's, you know, it's a fabulous industry to be in because there's real money to be made and there's a consistent demand for work. And so we really want to encourage women to go into those trades. And as many women who own homes as call me all day, every day, asking who is a female that I can hire to build this project. You know, we have a real shortage of construction labor across the board, but women who are doing that work are very few and far between and very, very in demand. So
have you ever had a woman, a young woman, want to like shadow you or intern for you?
Absolutely. There's a lot of interest in interior design internships. I think that it's more unusual for there to be a demonstrated interest in the job site side of what it is that we do. So I think that there's a cultural lack of understanding or societal lack of understanding about what a really skilled, talented, and hardworking interior design professional should be spending her time doing. It's not about, you know, I mean, there's a little bit of pulling fabrics and making pillows, but that's just a very, very small percentage of what she should be busy spending her time doing in the office.
Hmm. Who are some of your favorite women architects?
Ooh, excellent question. Carmen Morales, I think most of her practice is in Spain. Of course, you got to shout out Zaha Hadid. But, you know, I think women have historically been underrepresented in the industry. And so digging back through the pages of history and kind of uncovering all the female support that male star architects have had, those kind of unsung heroes of the profession, I'm pretty fascinated by that.
So Julia Morgan was the first woman architect in California to receive her license. She has a Julia Morgan ballroom, the Olympic Club. Like, I love her work as well. I'm fascinated with women that are the first in their field to do something.
Isn't that so incredible? And, you know, I think it's part of me is kind of sad. It's like, well, you know, I'll never get to be the first to do any of those things. I was born too late. But truthfully, we're all born right on time and there are a ton of firsts that await us. So
definitely. There's no one like you, Emily Cox.
Thank goodness. I don't think the world could handle two of me.
Okay, so now I want to talk about your real estate journey. When was the first time that you bought a house? Walk us through all that.
Well, a lot of my girlfriends daydreamed about meeting their husband. I daydreamed about buying my house. So I'm the eldest of six children and we have a big wide range of ages. So I'm daughter number one and then daughter number six is 16 years younger than me. And we're kind of spread out in between. And so I always knew that I wanted to live in Charleston because I'm from a small town called Mullins here in South Carolina. And Charleston was always the place to be. Now everyone in the world wants to live in Charleston. We've been very discovered, but I just had an absolute deep inner knowledge that I would have a home in Charleston that would be like a home away from home for all of my siblings as they kind of, you know, went through life, another place for us to get together and enjoy each other. And so I wasn't sure how I would do that because I felt like Charleston was just really expensive and, you know, beyond my ability as someone starting out. But I was desperate to have a house as soon as possible. So I actually applied in my late 20s to a program that we have here in Charleston called the Low Income Homeownership Initiative. And because Charleston is so disproportionately expensive from a real estate standpoint, there are a number of programs that assist working class young professionals to purchase their first home. And so I took advantage of that program and I bought a really fabulous craftsman cottage in an up and coming part of town that has since up and came. So I actually purchased in a community land grant or program. So a land trust program rather. So my ability to treat my home as a long-term investment is limited because I'm required to sell my property back to the program so that another low-income person can have the joy of homeownership should I ever decide to sell. Mm-hmm. But I'm never selling, so.
Never, never.
No. They'll take me out of that house in a body bag.
If you decide to move or go on vacation for a long time, can you rent and get that rental income?
I can rent as long as it's my primary residence. So I can have roommates and that can be structured in whatever manner I see fit. So if I were to take an extended, you know, if I were to take Building Badasses on the road and have a ton of speaking engagements for a year in the future, I could leave my home in the trusted hands of a renter roommate. And there's nothing barring me from purchasing a second home on the open market, which is the plan. But first, I need to purchase a commercial building to have a home for all of my many business babies.
So you're searching for a commercial space to buy?
Yep. I want our design firm Onyx to own instead of rent. And we started a co-working space for women in the building industry. So it's like, you know, co-working for the members of Building Badasses, and we operate out of that. So I want a building to serve as a home for that so that our rental income pays for our investment.
That's amazing. That's awesome. So proud of you for thinking about doing that. Are you right now? Are you in the process?
Mm-hmm. We're getting prepped. We've got 14 months left on our lease. So we're working on getting our financial ducks in a row and understanding what the market is like at the moment and timing it just right. Because it'll be a stretch.
Have you found a realtor, a commercial realtor? Mm-hmm.
We have a great commercial realtor that we really trust who knows the area really well and has awesome insight into the market in the part of town we would love to be in because we're looking for something that is projected for future development. So we want to be ahead of the curve instead of, you know, riding the wave.
And I know you're not afraid of a fixer-upper.
Never. Now, I do draw the line at a project when it comes to romantic relationships, but otherwise I'm not scared.
Okay, so that brings me to another question. So in your house, where do you draw the line? Are you into like a complete remodel or not?
Oh yeah, I would love, I mean, absolutely love a complete remodel. You know, the interesting thing about my personal situation is that you have to do the math on what is worth it in terms of investing in a house that you won't be able to treat as an investment. So I won't necessarily be able to get my money back on a renovation that I would do. I'm allowed to do it, but since my ability to profit on any future sale of my home is capped, I would be renovating for my pleasure as opposed to for an investment sensibility. And, you know, I think we've all been kind of spoiled by the market in recent years. And I hear clients all the time talk about exclusively their home in terms of money. The truth is, your house isn't a piggy bank. You know, the recent performance of the market aside, we certainly want to be smart about how we invest our money. But the fact that you may not get a penny for penny identical return on that investment or make money on that investment doesn't mean that that improvement doesn't have value. So there is value to living in a space that you love and, you know, being smart about how you invest your money in that. Sure. But definitely do that. But I see a lot of people just decide they're not going to pursue an improvement that they would actually really enjoy when they intend to be in the house for 20 years because they're not convinced they'll get their money back on it. And to me, that's a really short-sighted mentality. So I'd caution people against that.
Definitely. Investing in your property remodeling is not just about upgrading the value of it, but it's personal enjoyment as well, which is huge. The space that you're in every day has such an effect.
It really is.
I'm sure some people are not familiar with a land trust.
Mm-hmm.
It's similar to a below market rate unit here in San Francisco, where you buy it basically from the city or from a trust. Yep. And when you sell it, there's no equity to be made. It doesn't grow in value. You kind of sell it back. So that's what that is.
Correct. Ultimately, you know, you can think of it as, hey, I'm never going to be able to make money on my house. But ultimately, the way that I looked at it, it was an opportunity to own in the exact place that I wanted to be in a fabulous location, in a wonderful house at an unbelievably reasonable price point. And locking in that price point with a mortgage, which at the time the rate was just, you thought you'd never see a rate below 5.25. And now look where we are. But you know, I would never have been able to rent for this amount of time in my town for that amount of money. So the mortgage rate was such that locking that in, having a home to call my own, and knowing that I would be able to put money aside for future investment in the open market was absolutely worth it to me.
Totally. And when you sell, you're going to get all your mortgage payments back. Just not the end.
Exactly. You're basically living for free.
It's amazing. I tell people, I'm like, why are you renting for 20 years? You're throwing money away, but that's a different podcast episode.
I'm happy to return for that because I have opinions.
Well, tell me your opinions.
Well, I think that it would be rare for people to come out ahead in long-term renting. I mean, there are certainly markets where it makes sense, but I think that not being able to take advantage or not taking advantage of alternate paths to home ownership is unfortunate in most cases.
Definitely. And I think that stems from women just aren't educated on what is the big idea, like the concept, the ideas of home ownership, how that can benefit them. Mm-hmm. So it's just easy for them to be in this just rental cycle because that's what they know. But that it's not what benefits them.
It isn't.
We need to change that.
I think we got to work as a culture to change that. But I also think that it really is impacted by the mentality that your life is that you're projecting a certain linear trajectory to your life that is about, you know, meeting a partner and buying that place together. And, you've got to have the stability of two incomes to do that. That'd be nice, but none of that is guaranteed. And in many cases, you'd be better off going straight forward to buy your own thing and do your own thing. And let's not wait around on somebody else.
Totally. Buying a house and being in a relationship are mutually exclusive. They have absolutely nothing to do with each other. Like, why would you miss the opportunity to be making money, to investing in your future for the hope that you're going to get married? Like, what? We're not in the 50s anymore. Like, do your thing, be independent, be a queen, and like be in a relationship because you want to be. I mean, I bought my first house when I was 27 and super single, and it has nothing to do with anything.
Yeah. Let me tell you how much more enjoyable it is to buy the house you want instead of the compromise house that somebody else thinks would be a great idea.
So I did that big remodel by myself. My bathroom was purple. Okay. Purple. Never would I can do that now. but it was
do it. Bachelorette padded up, man.
Seriously. So I love that you're on that page too, because that's like what I'm about, is teaching women, like, why are you waiting? Like, just do this now.
No, this is a financial decision that makes sense in most cases. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're the rare tropical blossom, that is the exception to the rule. Come prove it to me. Let me see that.
Sure. Anyways, Emily, thank you so much for being here. Are there any final words, funny stories, anecdotes, anything you want to share?
Well, let me think. You know what? We save all our funny anecdotes for our podcast. Don't make me be giving them away to your listeners.
Okay,
bye. Come hang out with us on Building Badasses, both online and on the airwaves.
You need to listen to Building Badasses because it's literally hilarious. I laugh out loud whenever I listen to that podcast. It's so
funny. Well, the feeling is mutually exclusive. You've got quite the fans in Michelle and me.
Great. I can't wait to be on that because I can't wait to laugh.
Oh, you're going to be the best guest ever.
Yay. Thank you, Emily, so much. I appreciate your time.
You're so welcome. I hope you have a great afternoon, and big hugs to all your listeners. Come see us.
I will. Thank you.